worst word he could think of. "I'm afraid not." Kyron's tone was steely calm, the way he gets when he's really angry. I tried to move, but my feet felt like concrete. Annabeth, Grover, and Thalia were straining too, like they were just as stuck. "Kyron," Annabeth said, "look out." The Dracaena Queen became impatient and charged. Kyron's arrow flew straight between her eyes and she vaporized on the spot, her empty armor clattering to the asphalt. Kyron reached for another arrow, but his quiver was empty. He dropped the bow and drew his sword. I knew he hated fighting with a sword. It was never his favorite weapon. Kronos chuckled. He advanced a step, and Kyron's horse half skittered nervously. His tail flicked back and forth.
"You're a teacher," Kronos sneered, "not a hero."
"Luke was a hero," Kyron said. "He was a good one until you corrupted him."
"Fool!"
Kronos' voice shook the city.
"You filled his head with empty promises. You said the gods cared about me."
"Me," Kyron noticed. "You said me."
Kronos looked confused, and in that moment, Kyron struck. It was a good maneuver, a feint followed by a strike to the face. I couldn't have done better myself, but Kronos was quick. He had all of Luke's fighting skill, which was a lot. He knocked aside Kyron's blade and yelled,
"Back!"
A blinding white light exploded between the Titan and the Centaur. Kyron flew into the side of the building with such force, the wall crumbled and collapsed on top of him.
"No!"
Annabeth wailed. The freezing spell broke. We ran toward our teacher, but there was no sign of him. Thalia and I pulled helplessly at the bricks while a ripple of ugly laughter ran through the Titan's army.
"You?"
Annabeth turned on Luke.
"To think that I thought..."
She drew her knife.
"Annabeth, don't!"
I tried to take her arm, but she shook me off. She attacked Kronos, and his smug smile faded. Perhaps some part of Luke remembered that he used to like this girl, used to take care of her when she was little. She plunged her knife between the straps of his armor, right at his collarbone. The blade should have sunk into his chest. Instead, it bounced off. Annabeth doubled over, clutching her arm to her stomach. The jolt might have been enough to dislocate her bad shoulder. I yanked her back as Kronos swung his scythe, slicing the air where she'd been standing. She fought me and screamed, "I hate you!" I wasn't sure who she was talking to, me or Luke or Kronos. Tears streaked the dust on her face.
"I have to fight him," I told her. "It's my fight too, Percy."
Kronos laughed.
"So much spirit. I can see why Luke wanted to spare you. Unfortunately, that won't be possible."
He raised his scythe. I got ready to defend, but before Kronos could strike, a dog's howl pierced the air somewhere behind the Titan's army. It was too much to hope, but I called,
"Mrs. O'Leary?"
The enemy forces stirred uneasily. Then the strangest thing happened. They began to part, clearing a path through the street like something behind them was forcing them to. Soon, there was a free aisle down the center of Fifth Avenue. Standing at the end of the block was my giant dog and a small figure in black armor.
"Nico?"
I called.
"Roof!"
Mrs. O'Leary bounded toward me, ignoring the growling monsters on either side. Nico strode forward. The enemy army fell back before him like he radiated death, which of course he did. Through the face guard of his skull-shaped helmet, he smiled.
"Got your message. Is it too late to join the party?"
"Son of Hades,"
Kronos spit on the ground.
"Do you love death so much you wish to experience it?"
"Your death," Nico said, "would be great for me."
I'm immortal, you fool. I have escaped Tartarus. You have no business here and no chance to live.
Nico drew a sword, 3 feet of wicked sharp Stygian iron, black as a nightmare. I don't agree. The ground rumbled. Cracks appeared in the road, the sidewalks, the sides of the buildings. Skeletal hands grasped the air as the dead clawed their way into the world of the living. There were thousands of them, and as they emerged, the Titan's monsters got jumpy and started to back up.
"Hold your ground," Kronos demanded. "The dead are no match for us."
The sky turned dark and cold. Shadows thickened. A harsh war horn sounded, and as the dead soldiers formed up ranks with their guns and swords and spears, an enormous chariot roared down Fifth Avenue. It came to a stop next to Nico. The horses were living shadows, fashioned from darkness. The chariot was inlaid with obsidian and gold, decorated with scenes of painful death. Holding the reins was Hades himself, Lord of the Dead, with Demeter and Persephone riding behind him. Hades wore black armor and a cloak the color of fresh blood. On the top of his pale head was the helm of darkness, a crown that radiated pure terror. It changed shape as I watched, from a dragon's head to a circle of black flames to a wreath of human bones. But that wasn't the scary part. The helm reached into my mind and ignited my worst nightmares, my most secret fears. I wanted to crawl into a hole and hide, and I could tell the enemy army felt the same way. Only Kronos' power and authority kept his ranks from fleeing. Hades smiled coldly.
"Hello, father. You're looking young." "Hades," Kronos growled. "I hope you and the ladies have come to pledge your allegiance." "I'm afraid not," Hades sighed. "My son here convinced me that perhaps I should prioritize my list of enemies."
He glanced at me with distaste.
"As much as I dislike certain upstart demigods, it would not do for Olympus to fall. I would miss bickering with my siblings. And if there's one thing we agree on, it is that you were a terrible father."
"True," muttered Demeter. "No appreciation of agriculture."
"Mother,"
Persephone complained. Hades drew his sword, a double-edged Stygian blade etched with silver.
"Now fight me, for today the House of Hades will be called the Saviors of Olympus." "I don't have time for this," Kronos snarled.
He struck the ground with a scythe. A crack spread in both directions, circling the Empire State Building. A wall of force shimmered along the fissure line, separating Kronos' vanguard, my friends, and me from the bulk of the two armies.
"What's he doing?" I muttered.
"Sealing us in," Thalia said. "He's collapsing the magic barriers around Manhattan, cutting off just the building and us." Sure enough, outside the barrier, car engines revved to life. Pedestrians woke up and stared uncomprehendingly at the monsters and zombies all around them. No telling what they saw through the mist, but I'm sure it was plenty scary. Car doors opened, and at the end of the block, Paul Blofus and my mom got out of their Prius.
"No," I said, "don't."
My mother could see through the mist. I could tell from her expression that she understood how serious things were. I hoped she would have the sense to run, but she locked eyes with me, said something to Paul, and they ran straight toward us. I couldn't call out. The last thing I wanted to do was bring her to Kronos' attention. Fortunately, Hades caused a distraction. He charged at the wall of force, but his chariot crashed against it and overturned. He got to his feet, cursing, and blasted the wall with black energy. The barrier held.
"Attack!"
he roared. The armies of the dead
clashed with the Titans' monsters. Fifth Avenue exploded into absolute chaos. Mortals screamed and ran for cover. Demeter waved her hand, and an entire column of giants turned into a wheat field. Persephone changed the Dracene spears into sunflowers. Nico slashed and hacked his way through the enemy, trying to protect the pedestrians as best he could. My parents ran toward me, dodging monsters and zombies, but there was nothing I could do to help them.
Nakamura, Chrono said, attend me. Giants, deal with them.
He pointed at my friends and me. Then he ducked into the lobby. For a second, I was stunned. I'd been expecting a fight, but Chronos completely ignored me like I wasn't worth the trouble. That made me mad. The first Hyperborean giant smashed at me with his club. I rolled between his legs and stabbed Riptide into his backside. He shattered into a pile of ice shards. The second giant breathed frost at Annabeth, who was barely able to stand, but Grover pulled her out of the way while Thalia went to work. She sprinted up the giant's back like a gazelle, sliced her hunting knives across his monstrous blue neck, and created the world's largest headless ice sculpture. I glanced outside the magic barrier. Nico was fighting his way toward my mom and Paul, but they weren't waiting for help. Paul grabbed a sword from a fallen hero and did a pretty fine job keeping her Dracena busy. He stabbed her in the gut, and she disintegrated. Paul? I said in amazement. He turned toward me and grinned.
I hope that was a monster I just killed. I was a Shakespearean actor in college, picked up a little swordplay.
I liked him even better for that. But then a Lystragonian giant charged toward my mom. She was rummaging around in an abandoned police car, maybe looking for the emergency radio, and her back was turned. Mom! I yelled. She whirled when the monster was almost on top of her. I thought the thing in her hands was an umbrella until she cranked the pump and the shotgun blast blew the giant 20 feet backward, right into Nico's sword.
Nice one, Paul said. When did you learn to fire a shotgun? I demanded.
My mom blew the hair out of her face. About 2 seconds ago. Percy, we'll be fine. Go.
Yes, Nico agreed. We'll handle the army. You have to get Chronos.
Come on, seaweed brain, Annabeth said. I nodded. Then I looked at the rubble pile on the side of the building. My heart twisted. I'd forgotten about Chiron. How could I do that? Mrs. O'Leary, I said. Please, Chiron's under there. If anyone can dig him out, you can. Find him. Help him.
I'm not sure how much she understood, but she bounded to the pile and started to dig. Annabeth, Thalia, Grover, and I raced for the elevators. Chapter 19. We trashed the Eternal City. The bridge to Olympus was dissolving. We stepped out of the elevator onto the white marble walkway, and immediately cracks appeared at our feet.
Jump, Grover said, which was easy for him since he's part mountain goat.
He sprang to the next slab of stone while ours tilted sickeningly.
Gods, I hate heights,
Thalia yelled as she and I leaped. But Annabeth was in no shape for jumping. She stumbled and yelled,
Percy!
I caught her hand as the pavement fell, crumbling into dust. For a second, I thought she was going to pull us both over. Her feet dangled in the open air. Her hands started to slip until I was holding her only by her fingers. Then Grover and Thalia grabbed my legs, and I found extra strength. Annabeth was not going to fall. I pulled her up, and we lay trembling on the pavement. I didn't realize we had our arms around each other until she suddenly tensed.
Thanks, she muttered.
I tried to say, don't mention it, but it came out as, duh.
Keep moving.
Grover tugged my shoulder. We untangled ourselves and sprinted across the sky bridge as more stones disintegrated and fell into oblivion.
We made it to the edge of the mountain just as the final section collapsed. Annabeth looked back at the elevator, which was now completely out of reach. A polished set of metal doors hanging in space, attached to nothing, 600 stories above Manhattan. "We're marooned," she said, "on our own."
"Blah," Grover said.
"The connection between Olympus and America is dissolving. If it fails..."
"The gods won't move on to another country this time," Thalia said. "This will be the end of Olympus, the final end."
We ran through the streets. Mansions were burning. Statues had been hacked down. Trees in the park were blasted to splinters. It looked like someone had attacked the city with a giant weed whacker.
"Kronos' scythe," I said. We followed the winding path toward the Palace of the Gods. I didn't remember the road being so long. Maybe Kronos was making time go slower. Or maybe it was just dread slowing me down. The whole mountaintop was in ruins. So many beautiful buildings and gardens gone. A few minor gods and nature spirits had tried to stop Kronos. What remained of them were strewn about the road. Shattered armor, ripped clothing, swords, and spears broken in half. Somewhere ahead of us, Kronos' voice roared.
"Brick by brick. That was my promise. Tear it down, brick by brick."
A white marble temple with a golden dome suddenly exploded. The dome shot up like the lid of a teapot and shattered into a billion pieces, raining rubble over the city.
"That was a shrine to Artemis," Thalia grumbled. "He'll pay for that."
We were running under the marble archway with the huge statues of Zeus and Hera when the entire mountain groaned, rocking sideways like a boat in a storm.
"Look out!"
Grover yelped. The archway crumbled. I looked up in time to see a 20-ton scowling Hera topple over on us. Annabeth and I would have been flattened, but Thalia shoved us from behind, and we landed just out of danger.
"Thalia!"
Grover cried. When the dust cleared and the mountain stopped rocking, we found her still alive, but her legs were pinned under the statue. We tried desperately to move it, but it would have taken several Cyclopes. When we tried to pull Thalia out from under it, she yelled in pain.
"I survive all those battles," she growled, "and I get defeated by a stupid chunk of rock."
"It's Hera," Annabeth said in outrage. "She's had it in for me all year. Her statue would have killed me if you hadn't pushed us away." Thalia grimaced.
"Well, don't just stand there. I'll be fine. Go."
We didn't want to leave her, but I could hear Kronos laughing as he approached the Hall of the Gods. More buildings exploded.
"We'll be back," I promised.
"I'm not going anywhere," Thalia groaned. A fireball erupted on the side of the mountain, right near the gates of the palace. "We've got to run," I said.
"I don't suppose you mean away,"
Grover murmured hopefully. I sprinted toward the palace, Annabeth right behind me.
"I was afraid of that,"
Grover sighed, and clip-clopped after us. The doors of the palace were big enough to steer a cruise ship through, but they'd been ripped off their hinges and smashed like they weighed nothing. We had to climb over a huge pile of broken stone and twisted metal to get inside. Kronos stood in the middle of the throne room, his arms wide, staring at the starry ceiling as if taking it all in. His laughter echoed even louder than it had from the pit of Tartarus.
"Finally," he bellowed. "The Olympian Council, so proud and mighty. Which seat of power shall I destroy first?"
Ethan Nakamura stood to one side, trying to stay out of the way of his master's scythe. The hearth was almost dead, just a few coals glowing deep in the ashes. Hestia was nowhere to be seen. Neither was Rachel. I hoped she was okay, but I'd seen so much destruction I was afraid to think about it. The Ophiotaurus swam in his water sphere in the far corner of the room, wisely not making a sound,
but it wouldn't be long before Kronos noticed him. Annabeth, Grover and I stepped forward into the torchlight. Ethan saw us first.
"My lord," he warned.
Kronos turned and smiled through Luke's face. Except for the golden eyes, he looked just the same as he had 4 years ago when he'd welcomed me into the Hermes cabin. Annabeth made a painful sound in the back of her throat, like someone had just sucker-punched her.
"Shall I destroy you first, Jackson?" Kronos asked. "Is that the choice you will make, to fight me and die instead of bowing down? Prophecies never end well, you know."
"Luke would fight with a sword," I said, "but I suppose you don't have his skill." Kronos sneered. His scythe began to change until he held Luke's old weapon, Backbiter, with its half-steel, half-celestial bronze blade. Next to me, Annabeth gasped like she suddenly had an idea.
"Percy, the blade!"
She unsheathed her knife.
"The hero's soul, cursed blade, shall reap."
I didn't understand why she was reminding me of that prophecy line right now. It wasn't exactly a morale booster, but before I could say anything, Kronos raised his sword.
"Wait!"
Annabeth yelled. Kronos came at me like a whirlwind. My instincts took over. I dodged and slashed and rolled. But I felt like I was fighting 100 swordsmen. Ethan ducked to one side, trying to get behind me until Annabeth intercepted him. They started to fight, but I couldn't focus on how she was doing. I was vaguely aware of Grover playing his reed pipes. The sound filled me with warmth and courage, thoughts of sunlight and a blue sky and a calm meadow, somewhere far away from the war. Kronos backed me up against the throne of Hephaestus, a huge mechanical lazy boy type thing covered with bronze and silver gears. Kronos slashed, and I managed to jump straight up onto the seat. The throne whirred and hummed with secret mechanisms.
"Defense mode," it warned. "Defense mode."
That couldn't be good. I jumped straight over Kronos' head as the throne shot tendrils of electricity in all directions. One hit Kronos in the face, arcing down his body and up his sword.
"Oh!"
He crumpled to his knees and dropped Backbiter. Annabeth saw her chance. She kicked Ethan out of the way and charged Kronos.
"Luke, listen!"
I wanted to shout at her, to tell her she was crazy for trying to reason with Kronos, but there was no time. Kronos flicked his hand. Annabeth flew backward, slamming into the throne of her mother and crumpling to the floor.
"Annabeth!"
I screamed. Ethan Nakamura got to his feet. He now stood between Annabeth and me. I couldn't fight him without turning my back on Kronos. Grover's music took on a more urgent tune. He moved toward Annabeth, but he couldn't go any faster and keep up the song. Grass grew on the floor of the throne room. Tiny roots crept up between the cracks of the marble stones. Kronos rose to one knee. His hair smoldered. His face was covered with electrical burns. He reached for his sword, but this time it didn't fly into his hands.
"Nakamura,"
he groaned.
"Time to prove yourself. You know Jackson's secret weakness. Kill him, and you will have rewards beyond measure."
Ethan's eyes dropped to my midsection, and I was sure that he knew. Even if he couldn't kill me himself, all he had to do was tell Kronos. There was no way I could defend myself forever.
"Look around you, Ethan," I said. "The end of the world. Is this the reward you want? Do you really want everything destroyed? The good with the bad? Everything?"
Grover was almost to Annabeth now. The grass thickened on the floor. The roots were almost a foot long, like a stubble of whiskers.
"There is no throne to Nemesis," Ethan muttered. "No throne to my mother." "That's right."
Kronos tried to get up, but stumbled. Above his left ear, a patch of blonde hair still smoldered.
"Strike them down. They deserve to suffer."
"You said your mom is the goddess of balance," I reminded him. "The minor gods deserve better, Ethan, but total destruction isn't balance. Kronos doesn't build, he only destroys." Ethan looked at the sizzling throne of Hephaestus. Grover's music kept playing, and Ethan swayed to it, as if the song were filling him with nostalgia. A wish to see a beautiful day, to be anywhere but here. His good eye blinked. Then he charged, but not at me. While Kronos was still on his knees, Ethan brought down his sword on the Titan Lord's neck. It should have killed him instantly, but the blade shattered. Ethan fell back, grasping his stomach. A shard of his own blade had ricocheted and pierced his armor. Kronos rose unsteadily, towering over his servant.
"Treason!"
he snarled. Grover's music kept playing, and grass grew around Ethan's body. Ethan stared at me, his face tight with pain.
"Deserve better," he gasped. "If they just had thrones."
Kronos stomped his foot, and the floor ruptured around Ethan Nakamura. The son of Nemesis fell through a fissure that went straight through the heart of the mountain, straight into open air.
"So much for him."
Kronos picked up his sword.
"And now, for the rest of you."
My only thought was to keep him away from Annabeth. Grover was at her side now. He'd stopped playing and was feeding her ambrosia. Everywhere Kronos stepped, the roots wrapped around his feet, but Grover had stopped his magic too early. The roots weren't thick or strong enough to do much more than annoy the Titan. We fought through the hearth, kicking up coals and sparks. Kronos slashed an armrest off the throne of Ares, which was okay by me, but then he backed me up to my dad's throne.
"Oh, yes," Kronos said. "This one will make fine kindling for my new hearth."
Our blades clashed in a shower of sparks. He was stronger than me, but for the moment I felt the power of the ocean in my arms. I pushed him back and struck again, slashing Riptide across his breastplate so hard I cut a gash in the celestial bronze. He stamped his foot again, and time slowed. I tried to attack, but I was moving at the speed of a glacier. Kronos backed up leisurely, catching his breath. He examined the gash in his armor while I struggled forward, silently cursing him. He could take all the timeouts he wanted. He could freeze me in place at will. My only hope was that the effort was draining him. If I could wear him down...
"It's too late, Percy Jackson," he said. "Behold!"
He pointed to the hearth, and the coals glowed. A sheet of white smoke poured from the fire, forming images like an iris message. I saw Nico and my parents down on Fifth Avenue, fighting a hopeless battle, ringed in enemies. In the background, Hades fought from his black chariot, summoning wave after wave of zombies out of the ground. But the forces of the Titans' army seemed just as endless. Meanwhile, Manhattan was being destroyed. Mortals, now fully awake, were running in terror. Cars swerved and crashed. The scene shifted, and I saw something even more terrifying. A column of storm was approaching the Hudson River, moving rapidly over the Jersey shore. Chariots circled it, locked in combat with the creature in the cloud. The gods attacked. Lightning flashed. Arrows of gold and silver streaked into the cloud like rocket tracers and exploded. Slowly, the cloud ripped apart, and I saw Typhon clearly for the first time. I knew as long as I lived, which might not be that long, I would never be able to get the image out of my mind. Typhon's head shifted constantly. Every moment, he was a different monster, each more horrible than the last. Looking at his face would have driven me insane, so I focused on his body, which wasn't much better. He was humanoid, but his skin reminded me of a meatloaf sandwich that had been in someone's locker all year. He was mottled green, with blisters the size of buildings, and blackened patches from eons of being stuck under a volcano. His hands were human, but with talons like an eagle's. His legs were scaly and reptilian.
"The Olympians are giving their final effort," Kronos laughed. "How pathetic!"
Zeus threw a thunderbolt from his chariot. The blast lit up the world. I could feel the shock even here on Olympus, but when the dust cleared, Typhon was still standing. He staggered a bit, with a smoking crater on top of his misshapen head, but he roared in anger and kept advancing. My limbs began to loosen up. Kronos didn't seem to notice. His attention was focused on the fight and his final victory. If I could hold out a few more seconds, and if my dad kept his word... Typhon stepped into the Hudson River and barely sank to mid-calf. Now, I thought, imploring the image in the smoke. Please, it has to happen now. Like a miracle, a conchorn sounded from the smoky picture. The call of the ocean. The call of Poseidon. All around Typhon, the Hudson River erupted, churning with 40-foot waves. Out of the water burst a new chariot, this one pulled by massive hippocampi, who swam in air as easily as in water. My father, glowing with a blue aura of power, rode a defiant circle around the giant's legs. Beside him was no longer an old man. He looked like himself again, tan and strong, with a black beard. As he swung his trident, the river responded, making a funnel cloud around the monster.
No!
Kronos bellowed after a moment of stunned silence.
No! Now, my brethren!
Poseidon's voice was so loud, I wasn't sure if I was hearing it from the smoke image or from all the way across town.
Strike for Olympus!
Warriors burst out of the river, riding the waves on huge sharks and dragons and seahorses. It was a legion of cyclopes, and leading them into battle was... Typhon! I yelled. I knew he couldn't hear me, but I stared at him in amazement. He'd magically grown in size. He had to be 30 feet tall, as big as any of his older cousins. And for the first time, he was wearing full battle armor. Riding behind him was Briaris, the 100-handed one. All the Cyclopes held huge lengths of black iron chains, big enough to anchor a battleship with grappling hooks at the ends. They swung them like lassos and began to ensnare Typhon, throwing lines around the creature's legs and arms, using the tide to keep circling, slowly tangling them. Typhon shook and roared and yanked at the chains, pulling some of the Cyclopes off their mounts, but there were too many chains. The sheer weight of the Cyclops battalion began to weigh Typhon down. Poseidon threw his trident and impaled the monster in the throat. Golden blood, immortal ichor, spewed from the wound, making a waterfall taller than a skyscraper. The trident flew back to Poseidon's hand. The other gods struck with renewed force. Ares rode in and stabbed Typhon in the nose. Artemis shot the monster in the eye with a dozen silver arrows. Apollo shot a blazing volley of arrows and set the monster's loincloth on fire. And Zeus kept pounding the giant with lightning until finally, slowly, the water rose, wrapping Typhon like a cocoon, and he began to sink under the weight of the chains. Typhon bellowed in agony, thrashing with such force that waves sloshed the Jersey shore, soaking 5-story buildings and splashing over the George Washington Bridge. But down he went as my dad opened a special tunnel for him at the bottom of the river. An endless water slide that would take him straight to Tartarus. The giant's head went under in a seething whirlpool, and he was gone.
Bah!
Kronos screamed. He slashed his sword through the smoke, tearing the image to shreds. They're on their way, I said. You've lost.
I haven't even started.
He advanced with blinding speed. Grover, brave, stupid satyr that he was, tried to protect me, but Kronos tossed him aside like a rag doll. I sidestepped and jabbed under Kronos' guard. It was a good trick. Unfortunately, Luke knew it. He countered the strike and disarmed me using one of the first moves he'd ever taught me. My sword skittered across the ground and fell straight into the open fissure. Stop! Annabeth came from nowhere.
Kronos whirled to face her and slashed with Backbiter, but somehow Annabeth caught the strike on her dagger hilt. It was a move only the quickest and most skilled knife fighter could have managed. Don't ask me where she found the strength, but she stepped in closer for leverage, their blades crossed, and for a moment she stood face to face with the Titan Lord, holding him at a standstill.
"Luke," she said, gritting her teeth, "I understand now. You have to trust me."
Kronos roared in outrage.
"Luke Castellan is dead. His body will burn away as I assume my true form."
I tried to move, but my body was frozen again. How could Annabeth, battered and half dead with exhaustion, have the strength to fight a titan like Kronos? Kronos pushed against her, trying to dislodge his blade, but she held him in check, her arms trembling as he forced his sword down toward her neck.
"Your mother," Annabeth grunted. "She saw your fate."
"Service to Kronos," the Titan roared. "This is my fate."
"No,"
Annabeth insisted. Her eyes were tearing up, but I didn't know if it was from sadness or pain.
"That's not the end, Luke. The prophecy. She saw what you would do. It applies to you."
"I will crush you, child," Kronos bellowed.
"You won't," Annabeth said. "You promised. You're holding Kronos back even now."
"Lies!"
Kronos pushed again, and this time Annabeth lost her balance. With his free hand, Kronos struck her face, and she slid backward. I summoned all my will. I managed to rise, but it was like holding the weight of the sky again. Kronos loomed over Annabeth, his sword raised. Blood trickled from the corner of her mouth. She croaked,
"Family, Luke, you promised."
I took a painful step forward. Grover was back on his feet, over by the throne of Hera, but he seemed to be struggling to move as well. Before either of us could get anywhere close to Annabeth, Kronos staggered. He stared at the knife in Annabeth's hand, the blood on her face.
"Promise."
Then he gasped like he couldn't get air.
"Annabeth."
But it wasn't the Titan's voice. It was Luke's. He stumbled forward like he couldn't control his own body.
"You're bleeding."
"My knife."
Annabeth tried to raise her dagger, but it clattered out of her hand. Her arm was bent at a funny angle. She looked at me, imploring.
"Percy, please."
I could move again. I surged forward and scooped up her knife. I knocked Backbiter out of Luke's hand, and it spun into the hearth. Luke hardly paid me any attention. He stepped toward Annabeth, but I put myself between him and her. "Don't touch her," I said. Anger rippled across his face. Kronos' voice growled,
"Jackson."
Was it my imagination, or was his whole body glowing, turning gold? He gasped again. Luke's voice,
"He's changing. Help. He's almost ready. He won't need my body anymore. Please."
"No,"
Kronos bellowed. He looked around for his sword, but it was in the hearth, glowing among the coals. He stumbled toward it. I tried to stop him, but he pushed me out of the way with such force I landed next to Annabeth and cracked my head on the base of Athena's throne.
"The knife, Percy," Annabeth muttered. Her breath was shallow. "Hero, cursed blade."
When my vision came back into focus, I saw Kronos grasping his sword. Then he bellowed in pain and dropped it. His hands were smoking and seared. The hearth fire had grown red hot, like the scythe wasn't compatible with it. I saw an image of Hestia flickering in the ashes, frowning at Kronos with disapproval. Luke turned and collapsed, clutching his ruined hands.
Please, Percy.
I struggled to my feet. I moved toward him with a knife. I should kill him. That was the plan. Luke seemed to know what I was thinking. He moistened his lips.
You can't do it yourself. He'll break my control. He'll defend himself. Only my hand. I know where. I can keep him controlled.
He was definitely glowing now, his skin starting to smoke. I raised the knife to strike. Then I looked at Annabeth, at Grover cradling her in his arms, trying to shield her. And I finally understood what she'd been trying to tell me. You are not the hero, Rachel had said. It will affect what you do.
Please, Luke groaned. No time.
If Kronos evolved into his true form, there would be no stopping him. He would make Typhon look like a playground bully. The line from the great prophecy echoed in my head. A hero's soul, cursed blade shall reap. My whole world tipped upside down, and I gave the knife to Luke. Grover yelped.
Percy, are you,
crazy, insane, off my rocker, probably. But I watched as Luke grasped the hilt. I stood before him, defenseless. He unlatched the side straps of his armor, exposing a small bit of skin just under his left arm, a place that would be very hard to hit. With difficulty, he stabbed himself. It wasn't a deep cut, but Luke howled. His eyes glowed like lava. The throne room shook, throwing me off my feet. An aura of energy surrounded Luke, growing brighter and brighter. I shut my eyes and felt a force like a nuclear explosion blister my skin and crack my lips. It was silent for a long time. When I opened my eyes, I saw Luke sprawled at the hearth. On the floor around him was a blackened circle of ash. Kronos' scythe had liquefied into molten metal and was trickling into the coals of the hearth, which now glowed like a blacksmith's furnace. Luke's left side was bloody. His eyes were open. Blue eyes. The way they used to be. His breath was a deep rattle.
Good blade, he croaked.
I knelt next to him. Annabeth limped over with Grover's support. They both had tears in their eyes. Luke gazed at Annabeth.
You knew. I almost killed you, but you knew. Shh.
Her voice trembled.
You were a hero at the end, Luke. You'll go to Elysium.
He shook his head weakly.
Think rebirth. Try for three times. Isles of the Blessed.
Annabeth sniffled.
You always pushed yourself too hard.
He held up his charred hand. Annabeth touched his fingertips.
Did you?
Luke coughed, and his lips glistened red.
Did you love me?
Annabeth wiped her tears away.
There was a time I thought... Well, I thought...
She looked at me, like she was drinking in the fact that I was still here, and I realized I was doing the same thing. The world was collapsing, and the only thing that really mattered to me was that she was alive.
You were like a brother to me, Luke, she said softly. But I didn't love you.
He nodded, as if he'd expected it. He winced in pain.
We can get Ambrosia, Grover said. We can...
Grover, Luke gulped. You're the bravest satyr I ever knew. But no, there's no healing.
Another cough. He gripped my sleeve, and I could feel the heat of his skin like a fire.
Ethan, me, all the unclaimed. Don't let it happen again.
His eyes were angry, but pleading too. I won't, I said. I promise. Luke nodded, and his hand went slack. The gods arrived a few minutes later in their full war regalia, thundering into the throne room and expecting a battle. What they found were Annabeth, Grover, and me standing over the body of a broken half-blood in the dim, warm light of the hearth.
Percy,
my father called, awe in his voice.
What is this?
I turned and faced the Olympians.
We need a shroud,
I announced, my voice cracking.
A shroud for the son of Hermes.
Chapter 20. We win fabulous prizes. The three fates themselves took Luke's body. I hadn't seen the old ladies in years, since I'd witnessed them snip a life thread at a roadside fruit stand when I was 12. They'd scared me then, and they scared me now. Three ghoulish grandmothers with bags of knitting needles and yarn. One of them looked at me, and even though she didn't say anything, my life literally flashed before my eyes. Suddenly, I was 20. Then, I was a middle-aged man. Then, I turned old and withered. All the strength left my body, and I saw my own tombstone in an open grave, a coffin being lowered into the ground. All this happened in less than a second.
"It is done," she said.
The fate held up the snippet of blue yarn, and I knew it was the same one I'd seen 4 years ago, the lifeline I'd watched them snip. I had thought it was my life. Now I realized it was Luke's. They'd been showing me the life that would have to be sacrificed to set things right. They gathered up Luke's body, now wrapped in a white and green shroud, and began carrying it out of the throne room.
"Wait,"
Hermes said. The messenger god was dressed in his classic outfit of white Greek robes, sandals, and helmet. The wings of his helm fluttered as he walked. The snakes George and Martha curled around his caduceus, murmuring,
"Luke, poor Luke."
I thought about May Castellan, alone in her kitchen, baking cookies and making sandwiches for a son who would never come home. Hermes unwrapped Luke's face and kissed his forehead. He murmured some words in ancient Greek, a final blessing.
"Farewell,"
he whispered. Then he nodded and allowed the fates to carry away his son's body. As they left, I thought about the great prophecy. The lines now made sense to me. The hero's soul, cursed blade, shall reap. The hero was Luke. The cursed blade was the knife he'd given Annabeth long ago. Cursed because Luke had broken his promise and betrayed his friends. A single choice shall end his days. My choice, to give him the knife and to believe, as Annabeth had, that he was still capable of setting things right. Olympus to preserve or raise. By sacrificing himself, he had saved Olympus. Rachel was right. In the end, I wasn't really the hero. Luke was. And I understood something else. When Luke had descended into the River Styx, he would have had to focus on something important that would hold him to his mortal life. Otherwise, he would have dissolved. I had seen Annabeth, and I had a feeling he had too. He had pictured that scene Hestia showed me, of himself in the good old days with Thalia and Annabeth, when he promised they would be a family. Hurting Annabeth in battle had shocked him into remembering that promise. It had allowed his mortal conscience to take over again and defeat Kronos. His weak spot, his Achilles' heel, had saved us all.
Next to me, Annabeth's knees buckled. I caught her, but she cried out in pain, and I realized I'd grabbed her broken arm. "Oh, gods," I said. "Annabeth, I'm sorry."
"It's all right," she said as she passed out in my arms.
"She needs help," I yelled.
"I've got this."
Apollo stepped forward. His fiery armor was so bright it was hard to look at, and his matching Ray-Bans and perfect smile made him look like a male model for battle gear.
"God of medicine, at your service."
He passed his hand over Annabeth's face and spoke an incantation. Immediately the bruises faded. Her cuts and scars disappeared. Her arms straightened, and she sighed in her sleep.
Apollo grinned. "She'll be fine in a few minutes. Just enough time for me to compose a poem about our victory. Apollo and his friends save Olympus. Good, huh?"
"Thanks, Apollo," I said. "I'll, let you handle the poetry." The next few hours were a blur. I remembered my promise to my mother. Zeus didn't even blink an eye when I told him my strange request. He snapped his fingers and informed me that the top of the Empire State Building was now lit up blue. The mortals would just have to wonder what it meant, but my mom would know. I had survived. Olympus was saved. The gods set about repairing the throne room, which went surprisingly fast with 12 super-powerful beings at work. Grover and I cared for the wounded, and once the sky bridge reformed, we greeted our friends who had survived. The Cyclopes had saved Thalia from the fallen statue. She was on crutches, but otherwise she was okay. Connor and Travis Stoll had made it through with only minor injuries. They promised me they hadn't even looted the city much. They told me my parents were fine, though they weren't allowed into Mount Olympus. Mrs. O'Leary had dug Chiron out of the rubble and rushed him off to camp. The Stolls looked kind of worried about the old centaur, but at least he was alive. Katie Gardner reported that she'd seen Rachel Elizabeth Dare run out of the Empire State Building at the end of the battle. Rachel had looked unharmed, but nobody knew where she'd gone, which also troubled me. Nico D'Angelo came into Olympus to a hero's welcome, his father right behind him, despite the fact that Hades was only supposed to visit Olympus on winter solstice. The god of the dead looked stunned when his relatives clapped him on the back. I doubt he'd ever gotten such an enthusiastic welcome before. Clarice marched in, still shivering from her time in the ice block, and Ares bellowed,
"There's my girl!"
The god of war ruffled her hair and pounded her on the back, calling her the best warrior he'd ever seen.
"That dragon slaying? That's what I'm talking about."
She looked pretty overwhelmed. All she could do was nod and blink, like she was afraid he'd start hitting her, but eventually she began to smile. Hera and Hephaestus passed me, and while Hephaestus was a little grumpy about my jumping on his throne, he thought I'd done
a pretty bang-up job, mostly.
Hera sniffed in disdain.
"I suppose I won't destroy you and that little girl now."
"Annabeth saved Olympus," I told her. "She convinced Luke to stop Kronos." Hera whirled away in a huff, but I figured our lives would be safe, at least for a little while. Dionysus's head was still wrapped in a bandage. He looked me up and down and said,
"Well, Percy Jackson, I see Pollux made it through, so I suppose you aren't completely inept. It's all thanks to my training, I suppose."
Yes, sir," I said. Mr. D nodded.
"As thanks for my bravery, Zeus has cut my probation at that miserable camp in half. I now have only 50 years left instead of 100.
50 years, huh? I tried to imagine putting up with Dionysus until I was an old man, assuming I lived that long.
"Don't get so excited, Jackson,"
he said, and I realized he was saying my name correctly.
"I still plan on making your life miserable."
I couldn't help smiling. "Naturally."
"Just so we understand each other."
He turned and began repairing his grapevine throne, which had been singed by fire. Grover stayed at my side. From time to time, he would break down in tears.
"So many nature spirits dead, Percy. So many."
I put my arm around his shoulders and gave him a rag to blow his nose. "You did a great job, G-Man. We will come back from this. We'll plant new trees. We'll clean up the parks. Your friends will be reincarnated into a better world." He sniffed dejectedly.
I suppose. But it was hard enough to rally them before. I'm still an outcast. I could barely get anyone to listen to me about Pan. Now, will they ever listen to me again? I led them into a slaughter.
They will listen, I promised, because you care about them. You care about the wild more than anyone. He tried for a smile.
Thanks, Percy. I hope you know I'm really proud to be your friend.
I patted his arm. Luke was right about one thing, G-Man. You're the bravest satyr I ever met. He blushed, but before he could say anything, Concorns blew. The army of Poseidon marched into the throne room.
Percy!
Tyson yelled. He charged toward me with his arms open. Fortunately, he'd shrunk back to normal size, so his hug was like getting hit by a tractor, not the entire farm.
You are not dead,
he said. Yeah, I agreed. Amazing, huh? He clapped his hands and laughed happily.
I am not dead either. Yay! We chained Typhon. It was fun.
Behind him, 50 other armored cyclopes laughed and nodded and gave each other high fives.
Tyson led us,
one rumbled.
He is brave.
Bravest of the cyclopes,
another bellowed. Tyson blushed.
Was nothing.
I saw you, I said. You were incredible. I thought poor Grover would pass out. He's deathly afraid of cyclopes. But he steeled his nerves and said,
Yes, three cheers for Tyson.
Yeah!
The cyclopes roared.
Please don't eat me,
Grover muttered, but I don't think anyone heard him. The Concorns blasted again. The cyclopes parted, and my father strode into the throne room in his battle armor, his trident glowing in his hands.
Tyson, he roared. Well done, my son, and Percy.
His face turned stern. He wagged his finger at me, and for a second I was afraid he was going to zap me.
I even forgive you for sitting on my throne. You have saved Olympus.
He held out his arms and gave me a hug. I realized, a little embarrassed, that I'd never actually hugged my dad before. He was warm, like a regular human, and he smelled of a salty beach and fresh sea air. When he pulled away, he smiled kindly at me. I felt so good. I'll admit, I teared up a little. I guess until that moment, I hadn't allowed myself to realize just how terrified I'd been the last few days. Dad?
Shh, he said. No hero is above fear, Percy. And you have risen above every hero. Not even Hercules.
Poseidon!
A voice roared. Zeus had taken his throne. He glared across the room at my dad while all the other gods filed in and took their seats. Even Hades was present, sitting on a simple stone guest chair at the foot of the hearth. Nico sat cross-legged on the ground at his dad's feet.
Well, Poseidon?
Zeus grumped.
Are you too proud to join us in council, my brother?
I thought Poseidon was going to get mad, but he just looked at me and winked.
I would be honored, Lord Zeus.
I guess miracles do happen. Poseidon strode over to his fishing seat, and the Olympian council convened. While Zeus was talking, some long speech about the bravery of the gods, etc., Annabeth walked in and stood next to me. She looked good for someone who'd recently passed out.
Miss Much?
She whispered. Nobody's planning to kill us so far, I whispered back. First time today. I cracked up, but Grover nudged me because Hero was giving us a dirty look.